podcast for my mother. She read to me when I was little, so now I'm returning the favour and you're welcome to listen along. It's Sunday and that means I'm reading a classic. Thursdays are for offbeat stuff, but whatever I'm reading, it's always great writing. Tonight, I'm going to review a book from 1966, which is the reason that true crime is the incredibly popular phenomenon that it is today. True crime podcasts, from Serial to My Favourite Murder, S-Town and Teacher's Pet, are everywhere. The topic of true crime is proving highly enduring. Maybe you've listened to some of these podcasts. I know I have. True crime is also all over YouTube, from Bailey Sarian to Bella Fiore to That Chapter. What spawned all the true crime content that we enjoy today was the book In Cold Blood by American author Truman Capote. It is the foundational work on which all the current modern true crime content is built. I give In Cold Blood 5 stars because the writing is outstanding. And I'm going to read a small excerpt and I encourage you to buy it and give it a read or a listen as you prefer in this modern age of audiobooks. Now, true crime is not a nice subject, but it is a real subject of life. I'm not going to read the actual description of the crime from the book, or indeed address it in any detail, so don't worry about that, but maybe the topic is not one you want to share with kids. Up to you, listeners. Okay, to Truman Capote's In Cold Blood. It is a 1966 best-selling book about a terrible multiple murder committed in the town of Holcomb in the American state of Kansas in November 1959. The murderers were two useless jailbird idiots who travelled to Holcomb to murder 4 members of the Clutter family, father, mother and teenage daughter and son, for a lousy $50, a pair of binoculars and a cheap radio. They thought they were going to get a lot more than that, but they didn't because they were gullible half-wits. What had happened was this. While one of them was in jail for some earlier crime, another inmate told them a fanciful tale about a rich Kansas farmer with loads of cash in the safe at his farmhouse. There was no truth to it. Imagine that. Someone in jail told a lie to someone else. Well, I never. What are the odds? Pretty darned good, I'd say. But the useless jailbird who heard the story originally told another useless jailbird, and the two of them just fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. Like a couple of wind-up criminal dolls, they went to Holcomb in Kansas and, not finding a safe full of cash, killed everyone at the farmhouse for nothing. Truly awful. It made the papers. And the liar who'd told the original tall tale, he was still in jail when he heard about it. So he told the jail warden, told him what he'd lied about and to whom. And the police duly found and arrested the 2 killers, pretty quick smart after that. It was such an awful, senseless, pointless crime. And all because a couple idiots believed some jailbird running his mouth. Truman Capote saw a short item about the murders in the New York Times, and his interest was piqued. 4 dead in a murder at a farmhouse, no witnesses. Who could have done it? He went to Kansas to follow the story, and he got to know the townsfolk and everyone involved, even the killers themselves. Truman Capote wrote about it from every angle, kicking off true crime as the genre of literature that remains so popular today. In Cold Blood tells the true crime story of the murders, from the perspective of the surviving family members, the town's perspective, and the killer's perspective. Capote followed everything from the shock of it, the arrests, the trials, all the way to the two killers being hanged for their crimes. He broke new ground in analysing a crime from all sides, publicly. It was a highly unconventional approach and wonderfully written by a very gifted author. It became a smash, even though there was no whodunit to it, and the story and the outcome was completely known by the time he went to print. A year after the book came out, a film was made. Some of you may have seen it, starring Robert Blake as one of the killers. It was also a super popular movie. Truman Capote had hit upon something deeply needed in the world. A deep understanding of crime beyond the prosecution and defence and the trial and sentencing, more than the law. It's helpful for us to know, even though it's a dark subject, it's important for us to understand the impact beyond the horror of the crimes themselves. Tonight, I'm going to read a few opening paragraphs to give you a sense of Truman Capote's really lovely writing and to encourage you to get the book In Cold Blood. My review is that it is a rip-snorting page-turner. 5 stars, 11 out of 10. Don't walk, run to the bookstore. That's my review. But before I get to reading, a quick bit of background about Truman Capote. The big old gay from New Orleans, born in 1924. He lived a couple years in the Big Easy, but he was really raised in Alabama, and a bit in New York and a bit in Connecticut. His real name was Truman Streckfus Persons. But his mother's second husband was Cuban, and he adopted Truman, giving him the new name Truman Garcia Capote. He never went to college and was really rather proud of that fact. Instead, at 18, he got a job at the New Yorker magazine as a kind of copy kid, and he did it for a couple of years, which I think gave him a kind of new journalism style of writing. It's very modern. Then at 21, he became a successful author with his novel Other Voices, Other Rooms, the story of a gay man who realises he's gay. Very modern sentiments for a book published in 1945. After that, Truman Capote was always working. But in 1958, his novella, Breakfast at Tiffany's, came out and was even more popular than his earlier works. And it was adapted in 1961 into a terrific movie starring Audrey Hepburn. Then, in 1966, came In Cold Blood. Truman Capote was a star of modern American literature. He continued writing, and he died in 1984 of liver problems because he was a full-on alcoholic for decades. Despite the booze, though, Truman Capote was a very elegant writer. Here is how Truman Capote sets the scene in Cold Blood. Let's begin. The village of Holcomb stands on the high wheat plains of western Kansas, a lonesome area that other Kansans call out there. Some 70 miles east of the Colorado border, the countryside with its hard blue skies and desert clear air has an atmosphere that is rather more far west than middle west. The local accent is barbed with a prairie twang, a ranch hand nasalness, and the men, many of them, wear narrow frontier trousers, Stetsons, and high-heeled boots with pointed toes. The land is flat, and the views are awesomely extensive. Horses, herds of cattle, a white cluster of grain elevators, rising as gracefully as Greek temples, are visible long before the traveller reaches them. Holcomb, too, can be seen from great distances. Not that there is much to see, simply an aimless congregation of buildings divided in the centre by the mainline tracks of the Santa Fe Railroad, a haphazard hamlet bounded on the south by a brown stretch of the Arkansas River, pronounced Arkansas, on the north by a highway, Route 50, and on the east and west by prairie lands and wheat fields. After rain, or when the snowfalls thaw, the streets, unnamed, unshaded, unpaved, turn from the thickest dust into the direst mud. At one end of the town stands a stark old stucco structure, the roof of which supports an electric sign. Dance. But the dancing has ceased, and the advertisement has been dark for several years. Nearby is another building with an irrelevant sign, this one in flaking gold on a dirty window. Holcomb Bank. The bank closed in 1933, and its former counting rooms have been converted into apartments. It's one of the town's two apartment houses, the second being a ramshackle mansion, known, because a good part of the local school's faculty lives there, as the Teacherage. But the majority of Holcomb's homes are one-story frame affairs with front porches. Down by the depot, the postmistress, a gaunt woman who wears a rawhide jacket and denims and cowboy boots, presides over a falling-apart post office. The depot itself, with its peeling sulphur-coloured paint, is equally melancholy. The chief, the super chief, the El Capitan go by every day, but these celebrated expresses never pause there. No passenger trains do, only an occasional freight. Up on the highway, there are two filling stations, one of which doubles as a meagerly supplied grocery store, while the other does extra duty as a cafe. Hartman's Cafe, where Mrs. Hartman, the proprietress, dispenses sandwiches, coffee, soft drinks and 3.2 beer. Holcomb, like the rest of Kansas, is dry. And that really is all. Unless you include, as one must, the Holcomb School, a good-looking establishment which reveals a circumstance that the appearance of the community otherwise camouflages, that the parents who send their children to this modern and ably staffed consolidated school, the grades go from kindergarten through senior high, and a fleet of buses transport the students, of which there are usually around 360, from as far as 16 miles away, are, in general, a prosperous people. Farm ranchers, most of them. They are outdoor folks of a very varied stock. German, Irish, Norwegian, Mexican, Japanese. They raise cattle and sheep, grow wheat, milo, grass seed, and sugar beets. Farming is always a chancy business, but in western Kansas, its practitioners consider themselves born gamblers, for they must contend with an extremely shallow precipitation, the annual average is 18 inches, and anguishing irrigation problems. However, the last 7 years have been years of droughtless beneficence. The farm ranches in Finney County, of which Holcomb is a part, have done well. Money has been made, not from farming alone, but also from the exploitation of plentiful natural gas resources. And its acquisition is reflected in the new school, the comfortable interiors of the farmhouses, the steep and swollen grain elevators. Until one morning in mid-November of 1959, few Americans, in fact few Kansans, had ever heard of Holcomb. Like the waters of the river, like the motorists on the highway, and like the yellow trains streaking down the Santa Fe tracks, drama, in the shape of exceptional happenings, had never stopped there. The inhabitants of the village, numbering 270, were satisfied that this should be so, quite content to exist inside ordinary life, to work, to hunt, to watch television, to attend school socials, choir practice, meetings of the 4-H Club. But then, in the earliest hours of that morning in November, a Sunday morning, certain foreign sounds impinged on the normal nightly Holcomb noises, on the keening hysteria of the coyotes, the dry scrape of scuttling tumbleweed, the racing, receding wail of locomotive whistles. At the time, not a soul in sleeping Holcomb heard them. 4 shotgun blasts that, all told, ended 6 human lives. But afterward, the townspeople, theretofore sufficiently unfearful of each other to seldom trouble to lock their doors, found fantasy recreating them over and over again. Those sombre explosions that stimulated fires of mistrust, in the glare of which many old neighbours viewed each other strangely and as strangers. And that's where we'll leave it tonight. Isn't that some hauntingly good writing? I feel that I'm right there with the wind blowing through my hair as I stand and look at a small country town in a flat, flat, dry area, the closed down bank and the rising grain elevators. You can see why people ran out to get the book, can't you? I mean, those words describing that small town, population less than 300. They're so lovely, but kind of achingly despairing. It really is great writing, and you should definitely add In Cold Blood to your classics reading list, because it truly is a foundational work. And even though it's old, you can't really understand modern true crime without it. Right, that's your lot this week. Quite a short one, but I'll be back on Thursday, 9 p.m. Sydney time, with something offbeat. Yet a little bit Downton Abbey. There's a clue for you. Whatever will I read next? Tune in and find out. I do wish you all a great and safe week wherever you are. And as always, thanks so much to all of you listeners. Thank you for spending time with me and for your kind emails of suggestions of things to read and for reviews of the pod. Do keep sharing episodes to folks in your life who love great writing and the joys of reading aloud. Until next time, take care. It's slippery out there. And thanks for listening to Nitty Reads.